This is Greyhound Nation, Episode 11, recorded February 20th, 2021. Greyhound Gear. Greyhound Nation is a podcast for Greyhound enthusiasts produced by Greyhound enthusiasts. To learn more about our show and its hosts, visit our website at greyhoundnation.dog. That's greyhoundnation.dog. Hello and welcome to another episode of the Greyhound Nation podcast. I'm Michael Burns and I'm here with host John Parker. This is going to be a little bit of a different kind of show. It's just going to be the two of us. We thought we'd do a show about Greyhound gear. And during this show, we're going to share our experiences with and preferences for Greyhound gear. I think long term, John, I think we'll do a couple of these shows. I think for our goals for the show, we want to inform new Greyhound owners about the options for Greyhound gear. You're always finding yourselves asking questions like, man, what's the best kind of collar? Where can I get a crate? What size crate should I get? We're going to share those experiences with new adopters and existing Greyhound owners. And, you know, John and I, these are going to be kind of biased opinions. We have what we like, but you as a listener, we're inviting you to go to our website or a Facebook page. And based on what you hear on the show tonight, share your experiences and your own feedback in the comments section on the website or as comments to the episode on Facebook. What can you expect from each of these episodes that we're going to do about gear? We're going to make sure we give you links to all the products, and we'll give you links to the vendors that we mentioned on the show. Some of them will be local to the Atlanta area where we're based. But if they have an online presence, you'll be able to order from them. And while our opinions are about the gear are biased by experience, we are not going to be compensated by any of the manufacturers or vendors. We just think this is good information for you to have as a Greyhound owner or a potential adopter. In the future, we might partner with some of the vendors and manufacturers to see about maybe offering discounts to our listeners. But for this time, We're gonna keep it simple and just share what we've got. And for this episode, John, we're gonna talk about Greyhound collars, Greyhound crates, and exercise pins, and how to monitor your Greyhound remotely. Let's get the conversation started. Let's start off with Greyhound collars. First thing you get when you adopt a Greyhound is a collar and a leash, depending on your Greyhound organization. I don't know, is that unique, John, to our group here in Atlanta, or do most groups do that?
No, I think most groups, include a collar and leash in the adoption fee.
Okay. The one that we give at the Southeastern Greyhound Adoption Group is the Martingale. And we've had three in my family, three Greyhounds from Sega. And each one of them has come with our first one, we had a bright red nylon, with a 6 foot, 6 foot leash. And then we've got, two blue ones and they're super basic. They're about a half inch wide. The Martingale is especially important for a Greyhound because they are a sight hound. John, can you tell us a little bit about like what makes a Martingale unique for a sight hound, and especially a Greyhound?
Well, I think probably the most unique thing about it is that when it tightens kind of bilaterally. It tightens on both sides of the collar. Interestingly enough, when I adopted my first Greyhound in 1994, they were also called humane choke collars of all things, but Martingale kind of took over that, and that's the point. It kind of alludes to a horse martingale, which also pulls on both sides, and so that's what it is. It's an adjustable collar that when it tightens evenly across the neck because it's being pulled from both sides.
What are the materials that are typically find in the martingales? The standard martingale.
The standard one is typically a nylon webbing with brass or nickel hardware. Mm-hmm. On it, and then you get into some of the fancier ones with kind of brocade type fabric. They're still the Martingale configuration, but they're fancier, little bit more delicate fabric than the nylon webbing that the standard martingale comes in.
Okay. Okay. Well, let's talk a little bit about where you can buy some of these fancier ones. I think one of the things I like about the martingales, the custom ones, is that you can kind of, if you're an adopter and you want to give a little bit of snazz or pizzazz to your greyhound, you can get something that matches, you know, that says a little something about them, but it still be a safe collar for them to have and appropriate for the breed. I'll share a little bit. Let's share some examples from local resellers. Now, this one that I'm showing you here, this is from a vendor called Shore Dog. They are also known as Gray Collars in the Atlanta area. They are actually made in Pensacola. This is a vendor that has come to our local Gray Fest that we have with Sega in the Atlanta area. These run about $17 to $18. This one is an example of a military digital camo. I saw this 1 year and wanted to get it for Raleigh, one of your pups, John, and then we ended up getting a pink camo and then also a navy digital camo for another dog. So all three of our dogs have these. This is probably one of the most worn collars that we've had. It was around Raleigh's neck for the first couple of years we had him. Some of the more designer or fancy ones, this is an example, also from Shore Dog. This is not one of mine. This is an example of more of a ribbon or sort of broquet, I think. Is that what you would call this, John?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. There are several vendors for these, that we can recommend, as part of this show. The ones that I'm familiar with are Shore Dog and Gray Collars. They're basically the same thing. Two Hounds Design is probably one of the more well-known ones. They have one of the largest selection of patterns that you can order. And then we've also had experience with Houndstown in Greensboro, North Carolina. They've been a vendor at our Gray Fest locally here. John, can you recommend any vendors for those?
You know, I've been out of the martingale collar usage for so long. I'm not really up to speed. I know in the earlier days, Premier was kind of the primary provider of the webbing, the nylon webbing martingale. It was kind of the basic collar that came with most greyhounds. I know they've gotten bought a couple of times, and I'm not sure they're still around, or at least not under that name.
I'm pretty sure that the ones that we get from our group here in Atlanta are Premier. I may be mistaken. I'd have to go back and look. For these types of custom martingales, you're going to find the price to be anywhere from $15 to $40. The ones that I showed from the local vendor I mentioned earlier were about $18 a piece. As John mentioned, these traditionally come in nylon. Some of the fancier ones come in ribbon, silk. I would recommend, I don't know what your experiences with these are, John, but I think if I were to buy a couple of them, if I were to evaluate them, the broquet that we showed earlier that had kind of the fancy paisley pattern, if you're just listening to the podcast, those, I felt like if your greyhound had a thin coat, it might itch them a little bit, might cause some redness around the neck. And then I noticed that over time, the silk ones, they tend to slip the adjustments over time. So, just something to be aware of. In terms of caring for them, these are super easy. You can place the collars in a pillowcase and wash on cold cycle, gentle cycle in your washing machine just to hang dry them. We've done that for every one that we've had and never had any problems. They will wear over time. But for the most part, if, particularly the ribbon ones that we've gotten the last couple of times that we've upgraded, they have been pretty sturdy. So, John, you mentioned that you had transitioned off of martingales. So can you talk to us a little bit about what you're using now?
Yeah, I use what's called the leather fishtail collar, and it arises out of a couple of things. I begin to have dissatisfaction with the martingale collars that I had in my earlier days of greyhound ownership on a couple of bases. Number one was I didn't find that they wore well. They would get, as we say here in the South, ratty looking after a year or two. If you wash them, they would sometimes fade in color. As you mentioned, they would if a greyhound had a relatively thin hair coat, they would you'd get some wear spots on the neck. And then the other area of dissatisfaction was that I found them difficult to adjust just right. You had to take them off and on the dog several times. You have to take them off to adjust them. And so I just began to have dissatisfaction. I'd seen several dogs at lure coursing events or greyhound gatherings where there was some excitement, where dogs had pulled out of them. They're great if the dog's walking straight ahead, but even a well-adjusted one, the dog can put it in reverse, so to speak, and pull out. So my attraction for the leather fishtail collar arises out of my trips over to England to watch the Waterloo Cup coursing meeting and some other coursing meetings. And what I noticed was two things. Mm-hmm. One, these folks all had the same collar on. It's a traditional greyhound collar in the UK and Ireland. And they would bring the dogs to the coursing meetings in them. And there's nothing more excited than a greyhound watching a hare run up a field. And even more so watching two other greyhounds watch. And I never, ever saw a greyhound pull out of one. And there's a couple of reasons for that. One is they're instantly adjustable. They're basically a buckle collar. Mm-hmm. And so when you're in a situation where you know the dog's likely to get excited, maybe you're going to go out on a walk and you think you'll encounter some squirrels, or you're going to be at a sporting event like a lure coursing meet or in England a coursing meeting, you just tighten it one or two holes. And then there's no way the dog can pull out of that then. So that was the big advantage, it seemed to me. And the other one is, of course, their durability, their leather. Mm-hmm. And so they wear a lot better. I've had 2 and 3 generations of greyhounds in my home wear the same leather collar. I'll pass one down from one dog to another. And all you have to do is clean them about twice a year with some leather cleaner, maybe some Neat's foot oil. Just keep them kind of lubricated, and they just become soft as butter. I think they're probably more comfortable for the dog than the nylon martingale collar. And last but not least, and this is just an aesthetic taste thing, I find that they're kind of elegantly simple. I think mm-hmm. some of the martingale collars, especially the fancy ones with all the hardware they've got on them, I think they tend to kind of overwhelm the greyhound's neck, and you kind of tend to look at the collar instead of the overall, beauty of the greyhound. So for all those reasons, I've come to really prefer the fishtail leather collar, and I'm kind of a disciple of whenever that subject comes up on a greyhound forum on social media, I'll always throw in with my recommendation of the fishtail collar.
Well, you recommended when you recommended this originally, I had seen them on your greyhounds at lure coursing meetings, and so I went out and looked for them. And I think we're going to talk a little bit. I'm going to share the one that I have purchased before, and share this with the group. The vendor I've found for this is on Etsy. This is from the Trendy Whippet. And I believe this is the fishtail style that you have gotten before. Is this correct?
Yeah. They're called fishtail because they're kind of shaped like a fishtail. They narrow down at the buckle, and then they are wide at the part. Sometimes they'll flip around, and the buckle will be under the dog's chin. But when worn properly, and on a walk or at a sporting event, the wide part will be right there at the greyhound's neck, and that distributes the pull a little bit when they're walking ahead of you.
Yeah, we have we're using these. We use these on special occasions. I think we tend to gravitate towards the martingales, but I tend to change it up depending on the event. If we're going to take them to a lure coursing meeting or maybe a nicer event, a volunteer event, we'll put these on because I think it's a different style. I really like it. You had a recommendation that you get yours from. Where do you get yours from?
Well, it's an eBay seller. He doesn't really identify. We're going to put the link up on the show notes, but it's an eBay seller, and his prices are in the $21-$22 range. He's in England, and so the prices are expressed in pounds sterling. But it's an easy conversion when you use PayPal or so forth. And a lot of these are in England, a lot of the fishtail, England or Ireland. And so some folks can be put off and they think, well, it's going to cost a fortune for the international shipping. It's really not. It's typically in the $4 to $6 range. I usually get two or three when I get one, so they can send them in one package. But they come in a variety of colors. You can get them in the traditional, brown leather, black leather, and then, they come in a whole variety of colors. I've found them useful if I've got two or three dogs of the same color, coat color. I'll buy a red one for one, a green one for another, a pink one for another, and so forth. And you can tell who's who at a distance.
Yeah, we ordered a set for our hounds, I ordered from this Etsy vendor, and the price that I saw was from this one was between about $30 and $40. If you order from Etsy, this particular collar or any of the fishtail style collars from Etsy, if they're coming from the UK, I found that if you wait for an Etsy sale where they have I think they take 15% off or 20% off. Look at the vendors. A lot of them will do that and just do it across the board. And I think I saved some money on these. So I think it's a very stylish collar. I probably should use it more often. But we'll talk a little bit about later in the show about I'll share my experience with trying to use this collar with some other equipment that we're going to talk about later.
Other tip I'll throw in, Michael, is sometimes the collars, the leather fishtail collars will come, it's brand new leather, and so it can be a little stiff when you first get it. And so what I found to do is just, this is simply, very simple, you just take it in your hands, and while you're watching TV or just sitting around, just work the leather in your hands, bend it back and forth, bend it both ways, and that will soften it up over time. And I often do that before I put it on the dog. It'll soften up from the dog's wearing it. Mm-hmm. But if you want to start it really soft, just sit there and work it in your hands, while you're watching TV or just sitting around. So that's a little tip that you might want to use if you decide to try a leather fishtail collar.
Kind of like a Greyhound owner's fidget spinner.
Indeed.
What was the treatment that you said you conditioned it for the listeners?
You can get a variety of leather cleaners and conditioners. Some are cleaner and conditioner in one, and then kind of a final treatment is called Neat's Foot, NEATSFOOT, Neat's Foot oil. Mm-hmm. So you typically want to do that. Don't put it right on the dog as soon as you've done the oil. Let it soak in. Let it sit overnight before you put it back on the dog. If they get them dirty or whatever, I've run it under the sink, the faucet in the kitchen, and just clean off the dirt and so forth that way. You get it good and clean before you put any of the treatments on it, and they stay just butter soft for years and years.
I think I'm going to have to start using mine a little bit more frequently. Like I said, I change between the martingales and the fishtail style, and I think mine are still probably stiff as new. So a good tip to kind of get them a little bit more comfortable for the greyhounds. All right. So kind of transitioning here from the martingale, the fishtail, let's talk a little bit about a collar, a style that some folks may be a little averse to, but it has a training component to it, the prong collar. And I have used a prong collar with our strongest and youngest greyhound. He likes to pull. He's very keen on other greyhounds and other breeds when we take him to meet and greets. And just for some degree of control and behavior, we found a prong collar to be very useful with him and very effective with him. John, can you tell us a little bit about your experience with the prong collar and why you might recommend it?
Yeah, I'm always amused when the subject of a prong collar comes up on a greyhound group on Facebook or other social media, and it absolutely catches some people's hair on fire. And I find invariably it's because they've never used one. Mm-hmm. Now, I always like to say the people that are most critical of prong collars on greyhounds have never used a prong collar on a greyhound. And I think there's a lot of misconceptions about how they actually work, that somehow the prong collar is pinching the dog the entire time it's on. So I think what's important to understand is, number one, most of the collars come with little plastic covers over the prongs themselves, the tips. And the other thing is that's not how it works. It's not constantly digging into the dog's neck. Basically, the way it works is this. If it's properly fitted on the dog and the dog pulls, he'll feel some discomfort from the pressure of those prongs. It doesn't cut his neck. It doesn't, you know, do anything like that. Now, you don't jerk on it. You let the dog do the pulling against the collar. They feel that discomfort and they think, whoa, I don't like that. Maybe I shouldn't pull. And so you get what my wife calls power steering on a strong pulling greyhound, because it only takes once or twice, believe me. And then once they feel that and they know that collar's on, they won't pull anymore.
Yeah, we've had that experience when using it with our greyhound, Raleigh. We'd take him on a walk and, you know, he'd see a squirrel, and we've got a mix of two older greyhounds, and then we've got this really young bull in the china shop, and he wants to grab that squirrel. And in a park, that's, you just don't want one dog pulling like that. And he did it a couple of times, and he said, you know, I don't think I'm not going to do this anymore. I'm going to follow where Michael's going. I'm going to share on our video, share an example of this. This is the one that I have. This is the brand that I've been recommended, not only by our greyhound behavioral specialist for Southeastern Greyhound Adoption, Jennifer Bachelor. She's been on the show before. This is the Herm Springer Ultra Plus Pinch Collar. The size that we use is the small 2.25 millimeter. It sounds really super small, but it's actually the gauge of the wire in the prongs. And we bought some extra links because if you buy this small one, it does tend to be a little tight. You can buy a separate set of prongs to add, and you can adjust it as needed. Looking online just recently, I think it was about $20 for the collar, and you could get a set of extra links for $10 to $15. Is that your, do you have another recommendation or?
The Herm Springer is kind of the traditional one, and they make a version where they will sell you a set, of the little plastic, tips that go over the end of the prong for folks that are, you know, especially for, if you have a dog with thinner skin or a thin hair coat. And let me add one thing, you know, I think it's a shame that so many people get upset about it, because it could really be helpful to a lot of greyhound owners that have maybe a smaller person who has a big, strong male, or an older person. And nobody wants to have the feeling that, you know, every walk where a dog might see a squirrel or a cat run across the street or whatever is going to be just torture. They're going to have their arm that's hooked to the leash pulled out of the socket by the dog. Mm-hmm. And so I think this would make for a lot better experience for a lot of people who don't have that upper body strength, either by virtue of size or age or previous injury or anything like that, where they could have a prong collar. So it's kind of a shame that people condemn the use of them. Or if you go to an event with a dog and it's got a prong collar on, you'll get the hairy eyeball from some people, and they just don't understand, you know, how it works. And it can be a great arm saver and make walking a strong greyhound a lot more a pleasurable experience if he encounters something he wants to really pull out. I learned about them from I had a greyhound named Colonel, and Colonel was a big strong male, and we took him lure coursing, and every time it was his turn to run and you were taking him down to the line, he would just absolutely almost pull you off your feet because he was keen to run. And somebody said, why don't you take that dog to slips in a prong collar? Of course, I had the same misconception as well, but ultimately I said, well, it's worth a try, so let's see. So we put one on Colonel, and like I say, he pulled once, maybe twice against it, said, whoops, I don't want to do that again. And from then on, I mean, he lure coursed for several more years. It was a pleasure to walk him down there. He knew what he was about, and he knew that he'd get to run soon enough, but he also knew not to pull against that prong collar. So it made the whole experience much more pleasant for everybody. And so that's why I think it's a real shame that so many people are down in them because they don't understand how they work.
Yeah, and to your point about the a new adopter or a new Greyhound owner getting discouraged if they feel like they're getting overwhelmed by the dog. I mean, imagine if you've got a non-refundable adoption fee, for example, $20 investment to try one out and experiment with it with the proper instruction. I think that's a great way to do it. I got some advice from, as I mentioned, Jennifer Batchelor, for how to size it and kind of where to have it placed on the neck. One thing I would recommend, and we'll include this link in our show notes, is there's a website that does sell them, Learburg, and they have an entire page dedicated to fitting a prong collar, and they show it with German Shepherds and Yellow Labs, but great videos, great advice on how to, what the antenna of it is. And we'll include this as well. It's good to be educated about this. You don't want to do it if you don't know what you're doing. And if you have questions about it, ask somebody who, a dog trainer who does use them and find them effective.
I think it's important, and I'm sure this site points it out. The human doesn't pull on the prong collar. I think that's the biggest misconception that people think that humans are pulling on it to tighten it on the dog's neck. That's not the way it works. You let the dog pull on it, and that's when the dog controls how much the prongs tighten against its neck. And so, if people leave with nothing else on the prong collar, don't pull on the prong collar. Let the dog pull on the prong collar.
Yeah, that is something you have to break, because when we tried it with Raleigh, I found myself, come this way, and I would kind of do the little pull, and he would let me know, hey, that's not pleasant. It's something you do need to learn. So it's safe for both you and the dog, and let them sort of understand and kind of be in control of when they feel like they want to try and press the limit of the correction. All right. So that's the prong collar. We've talked about the fishtail collars, the martingales, and now just a brief discussion, talking a little bit about the harness. And John, I don't think you've ever used a harness with your hounds. Is that correct?
Yeah, I never. To be honest with you, it always seemed counterintuitive to me you put harness on sled dogs. And cart dogs to make it easier for them to pull, because it distributes the weight evenly across their shoulders and so forth, makes it more comfortable for them to pull a sled or a cart or whatever. So it always struck me as kind of, that doesn't make much sense. Why do you, if you've got a pulling dog, why do you want to make it more comfortable for him to pull? So I don't, I'm not going to criticize the use of a harness because I don't want people to criticize uses of prong collars when they've never used one. I've never used one. Mm-hmm. Obviously, they work because I've seen any number of people with greyhounds in harnesses, and they seem to be very satisfactory to them.
Yeah, we tried one out with Raleigh again, trying to make sure he was a little more manageable at meet and greets, and just being such a young dog and very strong, strongest of all the three that we had at the time. We tried a standard harness, which goes across the chest and under the front legs and around behind the front legs. In our video for the podcast, you'll see an example of this. We used a 1-inch large Pet Safe SureFit harness, and it was about $20-$25 on Amazon.com. There's another type of harness that local pet boutiques here in the Atlanta area, Top Dogs Pet Boutique, they will sell you what is called the the gentle leader harness, which is a combination of a harness, but it's also got a secondary leash that is more geared towards the head, and it will help you can kind of steer their attention away while also having sort of that standard leash. I've seen a couple of Greyhound owners who had really young dogs off the track that were really energetic. I think I saw one during a pack walk just a couple of weeks ago before this show recording, And it was seemed pretty effective. It kept him, it kept the young dog from getting too excited in a pack walk at a local park. But my experience with it, John, I got better behavior from the pinch, the prong collar. And the other thing I noticed too, is I think we bought what we felt was a large enough size, to grow. But it's kind of hard. I feel like you end up having to buy multiple copies of the harness because one of them is going to be great for a younger dog. But if, in the case of a greyhound puppy, and I think maybe our case was unique, but when we, if you're trying to use this with a puppy, just be mindful that it's, you need to, your dog's going to need to grow into it. I think if it's a greyhound off the track, or that's, you know, 2-3 years old already, you won't have to worry about that so much. That's the harness. I would recommend the prong over using one. Now sometimes things like, these sort of behavioral control type of, or a corrective type of devices are good for just doing the walks, but sometimes they're good for barking. And, John, you have the most experience with using what's called an e-collar, and tell us a little bit about that and how you use it.
Yeah, that's another device that, you know, is probably second only to the prong collar. It causes people's hair to catch on fire. They'll call it a shock collar, which was the old term for it. Again, I find that it's often condemned by people that have never tried it, and they've really come a long way. And it's really more appropriate now to call them e-collars. They're kind of like smart collars, like smartphones in that sense. Yes, they do use vibration, and yes, they do use different variations of a shock. But they're not. It's not like something that's going to, you know, knock you down. I've put the e-collars on my own neck and felt the shock, and it's more like a tap on the shoulder than it is something that's going to, you know, cause pain. So we have two brothers, two litter mates, and they take great delight. They love each other. They like playing. They take great delight, and we never know quite what sets them off, in just standing there and barking at each other. That's all they do. They just love to bark at each other. Well, you know, it was getting to where it was driving us crazy. We were concerned that it might drive some of our neighbors crazy. And so I spoke with some dog trainer friends, and you know, what do you recommend? Well, Garmin has come out with a line of e-collars. You know, Garmin, the same company that makes the GPS devices for your car. Mm-hmm. And what we ended up buying on this recommendation from several dog training friends was the Garmin Bark Limiter Deluxe, and it's a next generation e-collar, and you just put it on the dog. It's rechargeable. You put it on the dog, and it's got a variety of settings. And it's such that the dog barks 3 times, then he gets a warning, so to speak, a vibration. And if he barks another time, he gets the minor shock. And you can set it at various strengths. I've never had to set it at more than the first strength, which is the lowest. And it's like the prong collar. It only takes one time, and they figure it out that when they've got that collar on, you don't bark. I think right now, I honestly think I could put it on without turning it on, and they would still respect it.
And I've been to your farm, their farm recently, twice for your latest litter of puppies. And I've been there once when he didn't have it on, and once when he did have it on, and it was night and day. He was very calm. He really, really wanted to bark. He wanted to get into the action. He's in a run with two other greyhounds. He was super, you know, super well behaved. But I have been there when he's gotten into bark fests with his litter mate. And I think if I brought the litter mate from home, Raleigh, it'd probably be a trio. I've seen the difference. Tell me a little bit about, like, what's the cost of it, and does it have any GPS functionality?
No, it's simply an e-collar. I bought mine on Amazon, and right now they're $99. They've gone up a little bit in price, but believe me, well worth it, because you can't put a price tag on peace and quiet, you know. One thing I would urge folks that are considering it to do is to, I think on the Amazon listing, there's actually a Garmin video, but there's also several other video review type videos on YouTube. Go on there and just search for the Garmin Bark Limiter, and there's some really good, there are often dog trainers that are doing it, go through step by step. We don't really have the time here to go through all the variables that you can program in or that you can set on the collar. It's been a lifesaver, and they don't wear it all the time. It's just you put it on, you know, if they go into one of these barking jags, you go out and put it on. So it's not something the dog needs to wear all the time by any means. If you live in an apartment or a townhome and neighbors are complaining that your dog barks, when you're gone, and you may have to, you know, return the greyhound or move out of the apartment, this thing is could be a lifesaver.
Yeah.
You got to use it properly. You'll need to watch the videos and so forth. But used properly, and it's not difficult to use it properly. I've never seen a greyhound yet that doesn't respect it.
And just to educate myself and our listeners, the e-collar, this is not the same kind of thing that you might find it on a hunting dog, correct? It's strictly for bark control. It's not,
right.
I think it's not one of the ones with the remotes, right?
Correct. It's strictly to teach them not to bark, because they get a negative feedback if they do. Probably most greyhounds, you could set it to what they call the vibration mode, if they bark three, and the other good thing about it is it's not set off by other dogs barking mm-hmm. nearby. It's set off by the vibrations in the dog's throat when he barks. And gotcha. So you can put it on after a brief period of kind of training time, I've been able to always put it just on the vibration setting, and that's all they get. They just get a little vibration from it, and they realize, okay, I'm not supposed to bark when this thing's on.
Okay. Well, thank you for sharing that. I've been curious about it, and Garmin's a pretty respectable company for those kind of things. They make the fitness watches now and the GPS. So I thought this actually had GPS capabilities. We'll be talking a little bit about something like that later in the show.
I think Garmin does make collars, tracking collars and so forth with GPS capability. I have some greyhound friends out in California who are involved in open field coursing. And, of course, you know, chasing a jackrabbit, the greyhound can go out of sight. And mm-hmm. so this permits the handler to have tracking capability and see where the dog is, and you get fewer lost dogs that way. So, yeah, the Garmin does make some tracking collars. You also see them a lot on foxhounds, because foxhounds go way out into the woods, and you may lose one or two unless you can track it down through the GPS. So Garmin does make some GPS collars.
Well, later in the show, we'll be talking a little bit about a product that's a little bit more mainstream for keeping track of your greyhound, not less for a sporting situation. But before we kind of round out the conversation about these different collars, I think it'd be remiss of us not to briefly mention, spend just a minute or two talking about different kinds of leads or leashes. The earlier sites that we mentioned, Shore Dog, Gray Collars, Houndstown, even Etsy, you'll be able to find leads and leashes to go along with your various collars, whether it's a prong collar or a martingale or a fishtail collar. The prices tend to be about $15 to $30, depending on, you know, how fancy you get, what kind of material you make it. Most folks, if you're looking for a new leash, it's the traditional one's going to be a nylon 6-foot leash, maybe that Premier brand that John mentioned earlier. You can also get longer nylon leashes, 20-foot to 30-foot, if you want to do any recall training with your greyhound. I know that when I took Senator dogs for training with Jennifer Batchelor here locally, she recommended using those to kind of have a connection to your hound if you want to let them off leash and really teach them to do the recall really well. And I've also used 4-foot leashes to keep greyhounds close. I have tried the rope leash styles with the built-in handle. But I found that the shrink wrapping on those, if you've got a dog that chews it a lot, it won't last as long. Do you tend to use the nylon leashes or another style?
That's pretty much our day to day. I like the leather leashes the best, of course. And we take those to lure coursing a lot, mostly because if the dog is pulling, they're easier on your hand. It doesn't make any difference to the dog, but I find that leather leashes are a little bit easier on your hand. They don't quite cut into your hand the way the loop on a nylon leash might do. So I like those. Of course, again, the same thing as with the collars; they last forever. The leashes, they're obviously a little bit more expensive, but over time, you know, they'll last you longer, and they're more difficult to chew for dogs. I've had many a greyhound that's turned, especially the young ones that love to turn around and especially when they're excited at a lure coursing trial or a race meet, and turn around and get that leash in their mouth. It's kind of how they get their anxiety before they run out. You know, they're trying to think about something else, and so they chew on that. I've got any number of nylon web leashes around that have a little bit of chew area on them.
Yeah,
and you have to watch that when that happens, because obviously that weakens the strength. And I've seen leashes that look like, you know, there were still some left, but they were hanging by literally some threads, and the dog broke it and pulled out.
Yeah, I should mention too. We're sharing some Houndstown examples of the nylon, what they call the 1-inch banner leash. This is kind of your standard one. You can see it's about $13 here on Houndstown.com. I have had some experiences. One experience was with a strong puller where the lobster claw. Typically, you have the sort of the hook, the standard leash connection, but the lobster claw seems to be really popular. You would think it's a lot more robust, but I've actually had a dog pull hard enough that the lobster claw popped. I think it was a defective lobster claw. So something for if you're looking for a leash and you're wondering, just be mindful. If you have a really, really strong dog, you might want to go with a traditional connection versus a lobster claw style.
So should we talk about what lead not to use, Michael?
Yes, and I think we'll dedicate exactly the amount of time it deserves. Let's talk about the retractable leashes. John, can you recommend a retractable leash for a greyhound?
Absolutely not. Not for a greyhound, not under any circumstances.
I would.
They are dangerous. They're dangerous to the human. They're dangerous to the dog. I'll relate one story. One of the first times I ever visited an orthopedic surgeon with one of our greyhounds, just for a toe injury, he recounted to me, he had another greyhound coming in that day that had two broken legs.
Oh, my.
And what had happened was his owner had him out on a retractable lead out at about probably 15 feet or so. He saw a squirrel. And when you've got a greyhound on a retractable lead at that level, you have no control. You have absolutely no control over the dog whatsoever. So the dog pulls out the owner's hands, chases the squirrel. Meanwhile, he's chasing it down the street. The plastic handle, is bouncing along behind it, making all kinds of racket, which scares the greyhound. So he keeps running anymore, and he's turning around to see what's chasing him. He's trying to keep the squirrel. Anyway, long story short, the 15 feet or so of the retractable lead got wrapped around the dog's legs.
Oh, wow.
And he went tumbling. And he broke two legs doing it. So, I mean, that was enough for me to ever hear about using a retractable lead. It's just not worth the chance of doing it, because you really have. It's nice to let them out at some distance, but not if you're walking them. Not a greyhound. You just have no control if you're using a retractable lead. Save those for your Pomeranian.
Yeah, I would even go so far as to say, and this is more of a soapbox issue for this group here on this show, but I would say don't spend the money on a retractable leash. Even on a small dog, they cannot physically make the retraction strong enough to pull a small dog without probably running up some risk of liability for it pulling on even a small dog's neck. You're really just retracting yourself closer to the dog that's too far away. We've had bad experiences at meet and greets with greyhounds because greyhounds do have, you know, some of them may have a small dog tendency. So yeah, they're, when the owners come around with the retractable leashes around us, we ask them very politely to reel them in, just so that there's not an interesting event at a meet and greet. I think we've covered the gamut here, with the different styles of collars for, and the leashes. Let's talk about, changing gears and talking about, this is a common question, that comes up, from new adopters, that I've seen in my years of volunteering for Sega here locally. The whole idea of, you know, where is your dog going to live? Greyhound crates and exercise pens, you know, they're not going to obviously live in here, but, people wonder what to get. The first one I think we probably will talk about is, the standard dog crate. This is the Midwest Homes for Pets, Life Sage's double door crate. We have two of these here at my home. We also have an older Pet Safe, crate, and, this is a 42 inch model. And this is, typically what we recommend, to have available, for your hound, if you need to contain them for, you know, maybe house cleaning, or they need to rest from an injury or something like that. The prices for these on Amazon.com are, around $80 to $90. They have actually gone up in price recently. They can be had for about $60 to $70, a different brand from a company like Tractor Supply. So, we purchased our two examples for about $65 in 2015. For these, really just check for deals at local boutique stores or look for pet safe brands at some of the big box pet stores. John, what do you have any recommendations for sizes or
yeah, I think that, that 42, the 42 inch will accommodate all but the largest greyhound. I favor the Midwest myself, you know, mm-hmm. with the two doors. The reason for the two doors is it just gives you more flexibility both in your car and your home as to where you can put it. You can put it long ways or deep ways, so to speak. And that's why I like the two-door model. One thing we should maybe differentiate between the wire crate, which I think most people like a little better. It's a little closer to what the dog lived in, the greyhound in a racing kennel. They're not as big as the crates in a racing kennel, but it's similar enough to where the dog can see all around. Now some people will use what's called the airline crate, the plastic kennel crate. Mm-hmm. Nothing wrong with those. Some dogs actually like them because they have a little bit more like a den-like feeling. They're a little smaller in dimensions. They might fit into a smaller home or an apartment a little better. I think it's really just a matter of what you prefer, what your dog prefers. And there's two sizes, and those are numbered typically. Sometimes they call them small, medium, extra large, giant, et cetera. But they're most typically known by numbers in the hundreds. There's the 300, the 400, the 500. Oddly enough, there's not a 600 and then a 700. The greyhound, the typical greyhound sizes are the 500 and the, which I think is typically called large or maybe extra large, and then the 700, which is typically called giant. They're not as portable. You know, you have to, they do come apart, but they don't fold up the way a wire crate does. So there's advantages and disadvantages to them. I think the wire crate probably fits more people's lifestyle and flexibility than the plastic so-called airline crate. They're called airline crates because that's what airlines mm-hmm. require. You can't ship a dog, for example, in a wire crate. They require the airline crate, or they require the wooden crate.
Yeah, and one of the advantages to the wire crate is transportability. If you need to move crates and you've got you keep your dogs in an open space in your vehicle, and maybe you've got too many to put up crates in the back of your vehicle, okay. You can collapse these crates and easily and move them around and relocate them. The airline crates that you're describing are kind of a fixed size.
You can take them apart and nest them but that's just for transport. And even in that configuration, they take up a lot of space.
Yeah, yeah. Just a word about transporting the crates. We've had two and then three Greyhounds at a time. This is probably fodder for a future gear show. We know that a 42 inch crate will safely fit in a Chrysler Town and Country minivan. And for a later show, we'll talk about other opportunities for transporting a Greyhound. But you can, in a minivan, you can take two of these 42 inch crates, and with a middle row turned down, you can put them in there in a T shape, and you can transport them in a crate if you want to do that. We've also found that we can fit two 42-inch crates in a Sears car top carrier and then put luggage on top of it, and they're pretty durable. One other thing that we're, while we're talking about the crates, that's worth mentioning is, bedding. What's the best kind of bedding? You and I both have some experience with a product called Primo Pads. And you want to talk a little bit about those? I'll share them with the viewers.
Yeah, they're a vinyl covered pad. Primo is the brand name of them. They make them in standard crate sizes. They're pretty durable. I mean, in other words, they've got sealed seams. If the dog has an accident, it won't soak through to the foam insides of it. They're pretty comfortable for the dogs. You can see there they're heat sealed seams, and so they don't leak basically. And if it gets wet, the dog spills the water, the dog pees in the crate, mm-hmm. It's not going to go through. And they have, as you can see there in that picture, they have holes cut in the seams there to put a real robust zip tie through, so you can secure them to the side of the crate, so dogs that tend to dig in their bedding won't upset them or turn them upside down.
Yeah, and I'll be the first to say that the Primo pads for us have been a lifesaver from the standpoint of cleanup. They're so easy to clean up. You just you get some Clorox wipes if there's if there was an accident in the crate or something. They're so much easier to clean up, and then their bedding you can just chuck in the washer. And I think we found an interesting innovative use for these in the chain link kennels at our adoption kennels. We took Primo pads and we found something that stopped a common kennel problem. John, do you want to share a little bit about that?
Yeah, we had Primo pad folks will also make them in custom sizes, as I understand it. If you have maybe a kennel setting or a place in your home where the dog sleeps and you want to have a size made for that. So we had basically custom sizing made for the runs in our adoption kennel. And because they're chain link on the side, we were having trouble with what's commonly called happy tail, where the dog wags its tail vigorously and opens up the skin, and then you have a real mess on your hands because you have blood everywhere and they're hard to get to heal. One of our board members had the idea, why don't we put Primo pads on the sides of the runs where the tail hits the chain link? And so we got some made, and overnight it eliminated happy tail.
Yeah, I can't remember the last time we had a report of it.
Yeah, they don't have the sharp edge or the hard edge, I guess is the better way to put it, of the chain link to whack the tail against. And so, you can hear them when they're wagging their tail, bam, bam, on the Primo pads, but it's harmless. It doesn't hurt the tail.
Yeah. And if you've been listening and you're kind of wondering where to buy these, it's primopads.com. And there's just an amazing number of assortments and colors. So if you do want to, if that matters to you, then you'll be able to order from them. We ordered a large batch as a group. And if you are interested in doing that with them, reach out to them. They may do a discount for a large order. We don't want to speak for them, but that was the case for us because we were ordering such a large batch, not only for the kennels, but also for some adopters. Let's talk a little bit about, shift gears a little bit, and talk about exercise pens. I use them for remote events. You use them, I think you use them as extra fencing at your kennel. Tell us a little how you're using them.
We typically use them for puppies when they're kind of in that transitional stage. They're still in the whelping area in our dog room, but you want to get them outside every now and then to exercise, as the name implies. They're also, you know, you hear people refer to them as X pens. That's probably the most common term for them. So we don't buy the adult size. We buy the ones that I think are about 3 feet in height.
Mm-hmm.
And you can string any number of them together depending on the size of the area that you want to have. So when we're ready for the puppies to go out on the grass for nice weather and spend a few hours outside, we'll put up a couple of these X pens. We like the Midwest brand. We think they tend to be a good value, well made, but not terribly expensive. And so we'll string two or three of those up together, and the puppies can have a field day out there, you know, romping around on the grass and having a good time. And they're also valuable for, and you've probably used them more for adults than I have.
Yeah.
Not advisable to put a greyhound in at any kind of event where there's running involved, whether it's lure coursing, whether it's a greyhound gathering, or there's a little chasing of a lure, et cetera. I probably would not trust any but the oldest greyhound in one when they're inside of a lure, because they'll knock it over or they'll bang up against it. But for home use, where you don't want to use a crate, you want to give it a little more room than a crate, I think an X-Pen is fine.
Yeah, we've our experience with them, and just for reference, the Midwest pet on our video that we're going to have, I'm showing the 48-inch Midwest Gold Zinc exercise pen. These go for about $55. The 42-inch goes for $55 at Amazon. We have two of them, John, and you've seen us. We that's part of our kit when we come to the festivals. Without the lure coursing, we will set these up, connect them together. We will typically zip tie them together for a little bit stronger bond, and then we stake them into the ground, so they're pretty sturdy. But to your point, if a dog gets really excited and starts banging up against them, it could knock it over. We found that we can fit two adults comfortably in a 42-inch single. We'll throw the beds in. And if they get tired at an event, especially if it's hot outside, we'll put one of them up under a canopy. We found that two of them, the 42-inch pens, will take care of three greyhounds comfortably. And I have many a picture of them hanging out while we've been doing other activities in between events at those festivals.
Yeah, it's a really great tool for that because, you know, there's obviously a social element to these greyhound gatherings and so forth. And I get so tired of seeing people dragging their greyhounds around, not being mindful of whether they're, you know, standing in the sun or whatever. With these X pens, you can just let the dogs chill out in there, mm-hmm. give them a little bowl of water, some bedding in there.
Yep.
They're happy, and you can go off and visit with your greyhound friends and so forth. So it's kind of a win-win for everybody.
Yeah, I think the funniest thing that ever happened with an exercise pen is when I came back to the exercise pen after doing some of the greyhound activities at one of these festivals, and someone else's greyhounds were in the pen. I had to go find the owner. I was like, this is not a communal pen.
Yeah.
It was a funny experience. You know, so that's great. These exercise pens are really great for sort of mobile events. I haven't used one personally indoors, and you've got the puppy experience. Let's talk about another option for, you know, sort of containing your greyhound at home, the indoor kennel. You have kennels in both an outdoor building, an air conditioned and heated outdoor building for your greyhounds, but you also have them in a dog room in your house. Can you talk a little bit about those?
Yeah, seems like anytime I just happen to post a picture of dogs in our dog room in their enclosures, somebody inevitably will say, "Where did you get those? Those X pens?" They're not really X pens. They're heavy duty, paneled fencing, basically. But they're very easy to configure. You configure in very various ways. There's the, you've put up the Lucky Dog. That's the, those are a little bit taller than the ones we use, which are the Pet Safe Cottage View kennels. And so you can get them. You can also get extra panels. They connect together with brackets that are really easy to just a nut and a bolt kind of arrangement with a bracket plate. And they're really easy. You can configure them to various sizes and so forth. Mm-hmm. And this is more of a permanent or kind of installation where you want to have, maybe you do have a dedicated dog room. I've seen them in finished basement kennel settings and so forth, where you're going to have a more or less permanent arrangement. They're heavy duty. A dog cannot knock them over. And they've got a little gate arrangement in them. So you put them in an enclosure, and that's what we've got in our dog room. As I say, we use the Pet Safe Cottage View. They're 5 foot long by 5 foot wide by 4 feet high. I haven't seen a greyhound yet that's offered to jump out of them.
Yeah.
They might put their front feet up on them when you have a visitor come in or something like that. We got ours through Amazon originally. They now refer you. You can find them on Amazon. They refer you to other sellers, and there are a variety of sellers. The whole set right now is $322.
Yeah, this is the example that we pulled up during our podcast here. Our recording was from JewettCameron.com. This is the Lucky Dog brand. This is the 8x4. I actually picked up, if you're interested in having these, maybe having a more permanent installation of these in your home, find somebody, maybe somebody who's doing some private boarding or maybe reconfiguring a boarding situation. And this is not just Greyhound specific kennels. I was able to snag three of these 8x4s for $100 each in great condition. We've got them in storage right now because our current home doesn't accommodate them. But in the future, if we can have sort of a dog room, kind of like what you've got, we've got three of them, which I think is right now our current max Greyhounds. They are very heavy, heavy duty, but they are easy to assemble. It's stupid simple to assemble these. I had to disassemble them to transport them in a truck, but they're actually pretty configurable. Kind of wrapping up our discussion about crates and and kennels. John, you have some experience as well with because you do have the outdoor building with several of these indoor kennels. Talk to us about doghouse doors or dog doors.
Yeah, you get questions about those from time to time, and there's a wide variety of sellers of dog doors. I mean, they're a very useful tool in the right situation, where you can allow your dog to go outdoors on its own, and in the right setting, it can be a very owner friendly and dog friendly setup. We've found that the Hale Pet Doors, and we'll put the link on, it's halepetdoors.com, I think it is, to be very nice for our kennel. And we've got one in our dog room and fitted into a door that would allow, maybe we have an older greyhound that lives in the house, but we want to give them access to outside on demand. And so, we have that for them. So if you're interested in the Hale dog door there, you can go on the website and have a look at them. The size for greyhounds is the extra tall large. I'd recommend the double flap. It's a flap on the outside, a flap on the inside. It gives you a little bit better insulation. And believe me, when you have a windy day, that flap can blow, even though it's got magnetic closures on it. They're not cheap, I will say that, but they're very, like the extra tall large configured for a door is $541.
Oh, wow.
Directly from Hale Pet. But they're very heavy duty, and they've got a 5-year warranty on the flaps, particularly. That's what we've had to replace from time to time, and it's a prorated warranty. So if you need a new flap, you can. I've had them send them to me at no cost if it was within the first year. Occasionally, we've had one tear at the top or something like that. But the actual doors are very well built and very well made, and they have a variety of applications. You can get them to go through a door. You can, you know, install it into a door. You can do a wall model. They've even got them, believe it or not, for sliding glass doors.
You have one. Is that a hail door on your dog room door that goes out to your backyard?
Yeah.
So that's a different style.
Yeah. Now we typically keep a. They all come with what I call a slider, which is a closure device that's solid that you slide down into these channels on either side of the door, the opening, and you can keep it. That keeps a dog from going out and keeps anything on the outside from coming in.
So yeah, I was thinking.
We typically use, you know, you'd want to use that if you didn't want the dog to use it, or if you didn't want a raccoon or a possum or something like that to come in. But
yeah, and I think for your outdoor kennel, it's sort of on demand. They can use the flaps and go in and out. But in the one for your that leads into your home, that one's kind of secured until you actually need to let them out.
Right. Okay, and we have the slider panels for the ones that if we ever had a dog that was in the kennel that we didn't want to go outside, we'd put those slider panels in, and that way they would be confined to their run. Maybe if you had one that had an injury or you only wanted it to go outside on kind of a more controlled basis.
Very cool. All right. Well, kind of wrapping up our final topic for this, our first Greyhound Gear episode in the final 10 to 15 minutes. We want to talk about monitoring your Greyhound remotely. And, this is going to cover a little bit about security cameras and GPS collars. So, John, I'd like to start with you. Just briefly tell us a little bit about your experience. You use the Arlo cameras for a variety of ways to keep an eye on your Greyhounds at home. Can you tell us a little bit about those?
Yeah. A few years ago, we decided we wanted to have a puppy. We had a litter coming, and we wanted to have a puppy cam so we could monitor the goings on in the whelping area in our dog room. And so I know nothing. As you know, Michael, I'm not high tech. I'm low tech. And so I always have to depend on friends to make recommendations for techno gear. And so I asked several friends that had home monitoring systems, you know, what they liked and so forth. And anyway, ultimately settled on the Arlo Q, which is a wired device, a camera for inside applications, indoor applications. I didn't want to have to change batteries, and so and if you've got an area where you've got access to a receptacle, it's a no-brainer. You just plug it in. You can they have a metallic or a magnetic base, so they will stick to any metallic base, or they come with a little installation kit where you can screw them to a wall, etc. So I like them a lot. They're easy to set up, even for me. They're internet based. You know, you it's really easy to connect to your home network, and then mm-hmm. you can go and there's an app for it on your phone, so you can watch the various rooms. You have a Arlo camera set up on your phone, on your computer, etc. And we've even got one. It's a slightly outdoor application. We've got one. We've got horses, and so we've got one overlooking their stalls. That's outdoors. It's covered, but it's. We'll see how long that lasts. We've had it out there about a year, and it's going strong. It doesn't seem to have any problem with the elements. So
what's the cost anyway, for one of the? What's the cost for one of the kits, and how many cameras?
They're you about $80. The camera itself, you can get packs of like two or three cameras.
Mm-hmm.
They're not particularly expensive, and they're pretty unobtrusive, and they're pretty reliable. One of the things we like to do when we have a litter coming, we like to give all the prospective puppy owners, the access to the puppy cam. And that's another reason I like the Arlo. I'm sure you can probably do this with the other manufacturers' cameras as well, but you can give really anybody you want to access to view what the camera shows. You can even give them access to do things like, you know, turn it off and on remotely, et cetera. We don't typically do that. We just give them kind of a view only. So they can watch the puppies play and so forth. And we check on the dogs and if we're away from the home for the evening or, or whatever, just to see what's going on. So I've found it to be very, it has night vision. It has a speaker and a microphone. You can actually talk to the dogs, you know, remotely. And I've done that before just to see their reaction to their barking or something. You tell them to hush.
Now, with any of these cameras, you know, there obviously you've got to store this and process the video and send it up to the app. What's the subscription for the Arlo service?
You know, it's there is for us, there is no charge. If you want to use their cloud, where you, and this is more in the home security, if you want to have, you know, an ongoing recording situation, we don't really need that. Ours is not for home security, even though that's really what the Arlo, you know, that's kind of their first marketing niche. So the subscriptions is typically to have cloud space where you can, you know, the recording constantly, you can set it to constantly record, and then the recording goes up to the cloud, and, you know, you can set it to run for 24 hours before it re-loops or whatever. And, of course, the advantage of this, obviously, is if you have some kind of a break-in or something like that, or something stolen off your front porch, you can go back and see who the culprit was.
Well, and in kind of a similar vein, on our side, we use to monitor our greyhounds at home the Blink camera system. This is one of several different security platforms that Amazon has purchased, acquired over the years. It's basically a system with one or more cameras. There are indoor and outdoor versions. And there's usually a sync module that can handle up to anywhere. I think it's right now about 5 cameras. And that little sync module, you just put it somewhere in the house where it's got good connection to Wi-Fi and the cameras. The difference between the Arlo system and the Blink system is the Blink is based on a blink. I'm using air quotes here. It'll take a default 5-second recording triggered by motion. We opted for these because in our situation, just the outlets around the house were not really well placed for having a permanent connection. They can be powered by USB, and if you've got a spare USB charger from your iPhone or something like that, you can do that. I think you have to provide your own cable. I can't remember from our kit. Really, the advantage here is that they're wireless and they will last on Wi-Fi for about 2 years on a lithium battery, which means you've got infinite options for placing them. What we did is we put one in the den, we put one in the kitchen, the two places where the dogs are most likely to be, and then we put one looking down on their crates upstairs. They've been pretty invaluable. You can't do the long live view like you can with the Arlo. But we do with their cloud service. When we originally purchased them, we were able to get, we were part of the original business model where they provided unlimited, cloud storage, for the device, and it tied in with their app. The business model has changed. They've got to make money. You have to pay for all that video storage and whatnot. So if you do want to have cloud storage, they've gone to a cloud storage pricing model. I think it's a $10 a month for unlimited video for in a year. The pricing of the new system, there are two types. There's the outdoor camera, which is weather sealed. And then the indoor camera and the versions that are currently available are different from the ones I have. They have made the back and forth talking available, on both the indoor and the outdoor. Previously it was only outdoor. The indoor kit that we have, if you were to buy that today, we got a 3-camera kit. It's $140 for that 3-camera indoor kit. The outdoor version, if you were to get 3 cameras outdoors, is $180. The price, if you were going to buy any of these camera systems, I would think this might apply to the Arlo as well, but I definitely know because this is an Amazon-owned company, wait for one of their big sales. Wait for their Amazon device sales, and then use a website like camelcamelcamel.com to see the price trends, and you'll find out where they're different. The great thing about this one, John, I don't know if the Arlo camera can do this, is if we need to turn these on when we're walking out the door and we've got, you know, we're leaving for work, we arm the motion sensors when we're not there so we can keep an eye on the dogs. And that can be scheduled, which is a really great thing about this. But the other thing is, if we want to arm it early outside of the schedule, we can talk to our Alexa device and say, arm the, and I think I may have just activated her in my, in the studio here. We can just arm any specific camera or any set of cameras. And the other thing too is, you can also look at them on any of the Amazon Echo devices with screens, or if you have a Fire TV, you can bring it up on your Fire TV and check the camera, with just a voice command. So, we like these have been pretty good. The Arlo cameras, we've enjoyed being able to have that sharing capability. I think that's one of the unique things about the Arlo camera, which is really good. They've got a secure way to do that.
The new Arlo Q, later versions than we have, they do work with Alexa, and, you know, they have the cloud storage included in the initial price and so forth. So you can set them all similar to the Blink for motion and so forth. We don't do that because the dogs are – we don't want to get a notification wherever the dogs move or turn over on their bed or whatever. But I mean, they have all the security camera. That's what they're meant to be, truly, mm-hmm. is security cameras like some of the other makers, like Blink, like Nest, et cetera. And we just don't turn those on because that's not why we have them. But, yeah, they're – you know, they all produce excellent quality video. I suspect that, like the Arlo, on the other ones, you can turn on the little, you can hit the camera and freeze frame the mm-hmm. Particular segment, or you can take a video and save that in what they call the library, and so forth. So it's got some capability. The thing you have to watch out for, if you give other people access, especially on a puppy cam setting, is you got to be mindful of what you're wearing,
exactly,
or not wearing when you go into the yeah, to the dog room when you hear a puppy scream and you go in there suddenly to check on it. We typically take a towel or something and have it nearby. We can just quickly throw over the camera to hide the view, because I get reports from our puppy cam viewers all the time. I was watching him at 1 o'clock in the morning. I saw you come in there, you know, things like that.
And so, you were wearing your pajamas.
So, that's it. Yeah. So you have to be careful about keeping that in mind all the time. I still would do it anyway. I think it's a lot of fun. It's great. People seem to really enjoy watching the puppies play and so forth. And of course, obviously the people that are going to own the puppies, they particularly enjoy it. So I think it's a nice thing to be able to share like that. And I suspect you can do that on any of these cameras.
Yeah, I think you, it depends on the system. I don't think the Blink have, they're again, more to the security. So it's more snapshot type thing, but you can share out of the app if you need to share a clip and say, hey, what was Winston, eating something he wasn't supposed to in the den, you know, when he was out during the day, that kind of thing. You know, wrapping up sort of this remote monitoring, I'll share a final experience with it and get your thoughts on it. You know, one of the things that plagues adoption groups, I think, is when a greyhound adopter loses a greyhound or a greyhound gets loose, they get gone real fast. And I think, you know, you had that experience I think you had a greyhound chase some deer a couple of weeks, months ago, right?
Yeah. Yeah. He got out, and, I would have loved to have a whistle or a tracking collar on him, because we could have found him a lot quicker and he wouldn't have had to spend a 25 degree night outside on his own.
Yeah. Yeah. We have been, when our daughter was born, and she decided to start, opening front doors to see the world, at about age 2 or 3, we decided it was time to invest in a GPS tracker, and we're big fans of the whistle system. It's changed a lot over the years. We've gone through 2 iterations of it. I think there's been 4 in the time that we've used the system. The concept is, it's a low power, and you can see it. We'll provide links to this, but on our video that we're sharing during the call. During the recording, it's about the size of a piece of the big candy out of a Valentine's Day box of candy. And it attaches either to the existing collar that you have. We have ID collars that we keep on our Greyhounds all the time, and it's adjustable. There's a couple of ways to add it to it. It's rechargeable. Basically, the concept is the collar, when it's on Wi-Fi at home, it knows it's at home. It's in a low battery mode. It'll last for 10 to 15, 20 days sometimes. And every time you leave that Wi-Fi zone, it starts doing a little bit more periodic notification of location in the GPS model. Now, Whistle has two different models now. They have a GPS version that's location, health, and fitness, and then they have a different version called the fitness, which is health and fitness. We have the GPS model, and this model, it's about $130. That's the initial buy-in, and it'll fit on any collar. If you want to buy their collar, you can add to it. Sometimes they have bundles or discounts on whistle.com for these. But you will need to get the real benefit for a lost hound situation. You'll want to pay for the annual GPS service. It includes an AT&T cellular subscription, which pairs with the GPS monitoring, and that reports back to their system so that the mobile app you have, you can instantly check on where your dogs are. It's kind of neat. It's like a Fitbit for your dog. Some of the cool things that they're doing, just pros and cons with this, it's peace of mind if your Greyhound gets loose. We know that several Sega adopters, excuse me, who've lost their dog Greyhounds, and gotten them back, it kind of was an eye opener. They bought Whistle collars. You see a lot of them at our events now. One of the cool things that the company is doing is, they're experimenting with machine learning, John, and artificial intelligence to identify dog behaviors like choking or breathing problems. And so if there's a certain repetitive motion with the head or around the neck, they're starting to be able to interpret those and build alert mechanisms around them, which I think is really cool. It's a really cool use of the technology. The cons with the thing, the older hardware can eventually need to be replaced as the cellular system changes. Older hardware has to have docking stations. Well, really, if you're going to get this system, buy it new. Don't buy it used. You run the risk of it not working. And the cost has gone up. I think that's kind of the nature of things right now with COVID, increasing materials costs. Excuse me. And I don't really understand the fitness version only, because it's no longer free. You have to pay an annual fee for that as well. It's $60 a year for the fitness, which doesn't make any sense. I think it should probably be offline and work without it, but I'm sure they have their reasons and part of the overall capabilities there. This would have been useful, I think, maybe for your hound that got loose, and maybe many other people's hounds that have gotten loose in the past.
Yeah, we've seriously considered getting one. I kind of wish this is the same one that wears the bark collar. Barker and Deer Chaser. But anyway, it would be nice if Garmin could, or any company for that matter, could incorporate the Whistle tracking function in with the bark limiter function.
And yeah,
one collar on them.
At some point, your dog's collar starts to look like the Batman's utility belt.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. But I mean, it's a great. We'd had it on old Carson that night, we'd have found him. We wouldn't have had a night to worry about him.
Mm-hmm.
Was he back in the deep woods, or getting out on a road or whatever? But I wish we'd had the Whistle, and we were looking into. We've got another one that loves to take a lark, and he finds a door open, off he goes. And if we happen to have our front gate open, he's gone. We've managed to track him down every time, but quickly, we're considering putting the Whistle on him.
Yep. Yep. Just to round out that discussion, one of the things that is unique about this, something that's important on this system, is that you can set it to an active tracking mode for a lost dog, and it will go into active pinging every few minutes for up to about 30 or 60 minutes, so that you can get up, like you can track the dog and be able to find it via the app. If every Greyhound had that had ever gotten lost with our group, that would be amazing. We probably, some of the ones that we've never been able to recover, we could have gotten back and had a happier ending to the story. So it's one of the reasons I recommend it. And I think a lot of people on our group, and our local adoption group do. Well, we've kind of run, we've had a really good discussion about Greyhound gear. We've covered crates and collars and leashes and monitoring systems. I hope this has been as informative to our listeners as I've actually learned some things on this call. And John, any final words before we kind of wrap up?
No, I hope we'd love to hear from the listeners. If they found this useful, I hope they did. And if they've got other items they'd like to hear about, you see these discussions all the time on the various Greyhound groups on Facebook and other social media, like what's the best fill in the blank for my Greyhound. And so, and it's not just for new Greyhound owners, you know, there's lots of experienced folks that they want to try something new, or they want to have a camera, or they're tired of the collars they've been wearing, and they've had their dogs wearing, and so they want to try something else. So, let us know if there's other, gear items that you want to hear about, and if we don't have personal experience with them, we'll do the research and get a few ideas, and we can have a part two of this this type of episode.
Yep. Yeah, just a reminder to we'll have all of the links to all the products and the vendors on our website in the episode link. We want feedback and shared experiences from you on our website comments or Facebook posts, and be sure to share the episode with somebody maybe who's new to Greyhounds or maybe who's been asking these questions. And hopefully we in the Greyhound Nation can share our collective knowledge about Greyhound gear and spread that knowledge with others. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you on the next episode. Thanks, John.
Thank you for doing it, Michael. It was a great show.
Thanks so much for listening to the show. You can subscribe to Greyhound Nation wherever you get your podcasts. If you like the show, please rate, review, or leave a comment on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, etc. You can also write to us via the contact form on our website, greyhoundnation.dog. That's greyhoundnation.dog. We're also on Facebook. Search for our Grey Nation Show page. You can also tweet at us. It's at Grey Nation Show on Twitter. And we're also at Grey Nation Show on Instagram. This episode was produced in collaboration with host John Parker. Our theme music was composed and performed by Dimitri Taras. We hope you enjoyed our first Greyhound Gear episode, and we remind you once again, visit our website or Facebook page and share your experience with Greyhound Gear. I'm Michael Burns, and you've been listening to Greyhound Nation.